Hi, welcome to Forever Paranormal with Dr. Bill and Deb. The term paranormal refers to phenomena and experiences that are beyond the scope of normal scientific understanding and cannot be easily explained through traditional scientific principles. These phenomena often challenge conventional beliefs and are associated with the supernatural, metaphysical, or unexplained aspects of reality. As with any field of inquiry, it is essential to approach the paranormal with an open but critical mind, relying on empirical evidence and logical reasoning to draw conclusions. It's a topic that continues to intrigue and challenge both believers and skeptics alike, and if we can connect a paranormal element to it, we'll talk about it. You'll be surprised by what all can be connected to the paranormal. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and share the show, since it would not be possible without you, our listeners. And as a public service, we would like to let everyone know that you are truly never alone, even if you think you are. The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is 988. Please just reach out. Well, hello there, and welcome once again. This week, we are going to tell you the tale of what has been reported as the most violent poltergeist in the world, the Black Monk of Pontefract. Hi, Deb. How are things going this week?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, yeah. So, did you find anything interesting for us this week?
The attention-grabbing headline of my week is Territorial Turkey Terrorizing School Chased Off by Umbrella-Wielding Principal.
Okay.
I'm not sure which part is funnier, Turkey Terrorizing School or Umbrella-Wielding Principal.
Well, it is that time of year for the turkeys, especially the toms, to become territorial.
The gist of the story is that this turkey caused chaos in the carpool line and the principal chased it off. One more reason to put your kids on a bus, people. This wild bird was refusing to move, pecking at cars and people who tried to approach it. Animal Services was able to chase it away, but after a while it came back. And that's when the principal used this big black umbrella to shoo it.
Okay.
And like you said, it's mating season, so that explains the territorial behavior, but also makes me wonder where the other males are since they compete for dominance.
They're usually in a group.
Yep. These kids may be in for a repeat performance until breeding season is over. And again, if these kids were on the taxpayer-funded buses provided, there probably would not be a story, but at least the kids would not be in danger of attack.
Well, that's true, but there is a bus situation, I think, sometimes. But, you know, what I have to wonder is, I don't want to know what school it is, but that school must definitely be full of turkeys. If that turkey's hanging there looking out, you know, that says a whole lot for that school or that school system.
Something caught its eye.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, we'll move on from there. You know, we'll just fly away. Okay. Okay, folks. The Black Monk of Pontefract is a well-known ghost story in England. It centers around 30 East Drive, a house in Pontefract, West Yorkshire, which gained notoriety in the 1960s due to the reported poltergeist activity. The most famous manifestation was said to be a hooded figure known as the Black Monk. The Pritchard family, who lived in the house during the 60s, well, in the 70s too, claimed to experience various paranormal phenomena, including objects moving on their own, unexplained noises, and sightings of the Black Monk. These events were documented in the press and even investigated by paranormal researchers. The story of the Black Monk of Pontefract has become a part of local folklore and has been the subject of books, documentaries, and films. The house is now owned by Bill Bungay, who was the producer of the movie When the Lights Went Out, which is the story loosely based on the poltergeist. He said he bought the house quite cheaply after filming and began allowing ghost hunters to spend the night on the premises for a fee. But most people probably don't know that the movie was directed by Pat Holden, who just happens to be Gene Pritchard's nephew, who claims to have witnessed some of the activity personally when he was a youngster. Initially a modest news story, garnering attention immediately from the regional periodicals, namely the Pontefract and Castle Ford Express, and subsequently then the Yorkshire Post. The bulk of the acclaim can be attributed to Colin Wilson. Wilson, a celebrated author known for his works such as The Outsider and The Occult, made a trip to Yorkshire to delve into the matter, resulting in the publication of Poltergeist in 1981. The book became a must-read for anyone with an interest in psychical research.
Is the movie Poltergeist based on this book?
You know, actually, it is. This movie, The Poltergeist, is based on the book more than the one When the Lights Went Out, which is loosely based on the stories around the Black Monk of Pontefract. But yeah, the movie Poltergeist is based on the book. But let's go to the beginning. Or is it? You know, the previous tenant, the Farrer family, said their 2-year-old daughter was being attacked and scratched by some unknown force. 10 years to that particular day in August in 1966, the Pritchard family embarked on a new chapter in their lives as they settled into their new home, a house filled with warmth and character. The family consisted of Jean and her hard-working husband Joe, along with her 2 wonderful children, Philip, who was a mature 15-year-old, and Diane, who was an affectionate 12-year-old, who, for some unknown reason, appeared to be the center of the mysterious paranormal occurrences that began to manifest. These strange happenings continued to occur throughout the vibrant and ever-changing 1960s and into the liberated 1970s, making the Pritchard's family home a place of both love, curiosity, and terror. That year, during the summer bank holiday, which marks the end of summer much like Labor Day does in the United States, the Pritchards went to Devonshire for holiday but left 15-year-old Philip at home with his grandmother Sarah. When Philip went to the kitchen to put on a pot of tea, a fine layer of chalk-like dust started falling from the ceiling. But it really wasn't from the ceiling. It was from a level below head height. At first, the grandmother accused Philip of pranking her, but it soon became clear that he was not doing it. At this point, his grandmother called across the street to Marie Kelly, her daughter, who was Philip's aunt, to witness the phenomenon and to help clean it up before the parents came home. Marie, Philip's aunt, went into the kitchen to gather cleaning supplies. Suddenly, she slipped on a water puddle that formed unexpectedly. Despite her attempts to dry the floor, more puddles surfaced, impeding her efforts right before Philip's eyes. The water was turned off to the house, but the puddles didn't stop. The local water authority checked above the ceiling and below the floors, but found no explanation for the water. It was as mysterious as the dust in the living room, which by this time covered everything. After the authorities left, the water puddles stopped, but other paranormal activity continued. The tea and sugar dispenser started dispersing and threw tea leaves and sugar all over the counter, and the cupboard started shaking and making loud bangs, and loud bangs were coming from upstairs, and even a plant was moved without its pot and set halfway up the staircase, while the pot ended up on the upper landing. This expectedly is when everyone bolted and ran across the street to the Kelly house. Vic Kelly, Marie's husband, was having none of this nonsense and called the police to check the house. They, of course, found nothing and everything seemed normal enough. Well, that is until around midnight when Vic Kelly was leaving to go back home. Suddenly, 2 pictures came crashing down from the wall to the floor, shattering all over. And he just, like, turned around and left.
So the water authorities were able to witness the water puddle activity, but the police did not witness anything like this entity knew who to mess with and who not to?
Apparently something like that. And yes, the water authority saw puddles coming up, and their official determination was some kind of weird condensation due to the heat of summer. But that was the only explanation they could come up with. But it wasn't long after they left that the puddle stopped. And while the police were in the house, nothing happened at all. But when Joe, Jean, and Diane Pritchard returned home, Jean's mother, Sarah, told them everything that happened. But they, of course, did not believe her. They didn't believe her, Philip, or the aunt. It appears that this was the end of that activity. Well, for about 2 years.
Wait, it just stopped for no apparent reason?
Yeah, that's the way it's reported, that it just completely stopped for no apparent reason for about 2 years. And then, in 1968, Jean decided she was going to redecorate her daughter's room. At this time, Philip would be about 17, but his sister Diane would be turning right around 14 when it all started back up, much more violently than before. And it seems that this is when Diane became the center of the activity. It is said the activity started in Diane's room, ramping up during the remodel. A paintbrush was flung across the room, narrowly missing Jean's head. Then a section of wallpaper started dancing around like a snake through the air with no one touching it. And when Jean went to grab it, it just fell to the floor. Then, as she was turning to leave the room, the vacuum cleaner turned itself on and started going around the room and trying to act like a bat or something swinging around. That's when Jean first saw it, though. The mysterious black-robed figure, who, according to the local newspaper reports, was being seen all over the neighborhood. What follows has been described as 9 months of sheer terror and chaos.
So was the activity happening in other houses in the neighborhood or just sightings of this figure?
Both. The sightings were more than anything, but some other places did experience a little bit of activity, but nothing like the Pritchard house.
Okay.
And according to the account, Diane was the individual who found herself in a perplexing and seemingly impossible situation. She reported that on multiple occasions, she had been pinned to the floor of her bedroom by furniture that was really heavy enough to cause her serious harm, but didn't. Should it have fallen on her in a typical manner, she would have been squashed. However, in a strange and inexplicable turn of events, Diane remained unharmed, despite the weight of the furniture on her body. In the year 1968, the entity was dubbed Mr. Nobody in the local press. However, the family members, ever striving for normalcy amidst the chaos, opted to affectionately refer to the poltergeist as Fred. Fred, okay. This decision may have been an attempt to tame the unknown, to transform the fear of the unknown into something less intimidating. Despite their best efforts, neither the family nor the house-proud mother, Jean, could coax the entity to abandon their home. Jean, a resilient woman, refused to be driven out of her own house by an uninvited guest. The family tried various methods to evict the poltergeist, but their attempts were met with resistance at every turn. The entity, seemingly unimpressed by their efforts, would seep holy water from the walls, slap faces, and even shove individuals down the stairs. Christian hymns and songs intended to drive Fred away were met with a peculiar response, the appearance of gloved hands, adorned with oversized women's fur gloves, would emerge from thin air and conduct the very songs meant to banish the entity.
How did they determine the water seeping from the walls was holy?
Well, I think they made the assumption that it was because they kept throwing holy water around while they're trying to get rid of Fred and stuff like that. And then the water would come back out of the walls as it was splashed on. So I think they just made the assumption that it was the holy water. which is probably a logical assumption on their part. But the poltergeist, known as Fred, was not all menace and terror, Deb. In fact, many of its actions were both astounding and often wildly entertaining. For instance, Fred once calmly removed an entire jug of milk from the refrigerator, only to pour it over a skeptical aunt's head, much to the delight and amusement of the children. The poltergeist, it seemed, had a mischievous streak as well, and while its presence was undoubtedly disruptive, it also brought a strange sense of amusement to the family's daily lives.
So it sounds like they just became accustomed to the activity, and things like having milk poured on you was no big deal. It does not seem normal to call it a poltergeist and be amused by things like that. How is it deemed a poltergeist?
Well, it's a poltergeist by pure definition of poltergeist, an entity or spirit that has the ability to move objects and do things and make sounds, this and that. So it's called a poltergeist by a pure definition. And yeah, I think pouring milk on somebody's head is a big deal, but it amused the children. It was reported in the book Poltergeist, as the aunt was very skeptical and basically sitting at the table calling the whole family liars. And then Fred decided to stick up for the family, apparently. But one particular harrowing incident, though, was observed by the Pritchard family, who claimed to have witnessed Diane being dragged upstairs by the unseen force. This terrifying event left visible marks on Diane's throat, which she later revealed were the result of being pulled by the mysterious entity. This is where the violence was really starting to come out. As a consequence of this traumatic experience, Diane was unable to enter the house where the incident occurred for several years that followed. The exact nature of the unseen entity and the cause of these bizarre occurrences still remain a mystery, leaving those who have heard the story to speculate on the possible explanations for these inexplicable events. But why was this happening, and who was the black-robed figure?
Did the activity continue when Diane had left the house? I thought she was the center of this story.
Well, she was the center of the main activity when she became 14 or so. But yeah, the activity completely continued, but not as violent against anybody else as it was against her. You know, the haunting of the house on 30 East Drive in Pontefract, England, was a subject of great local intrigue and fascination. The mysterious events that took place within its walls were reported in local newspapers and even caught the attention of the police officers, local politicians, and clergy members, who all claimed to have witnessed the phenomena. The house was located on a bus route, and drivers would share the house's eerie reputation with the passengers just to spark interest. The haunting's origins were traced back to the 11th century, when the Cluniac Order, the first attempt at monastic reform, established a network of affiliated monasteries that reported directly back to the Cluny Abbey. One such house was built in Pontefract, and it was believed that the land on which the haunted house stood was the site of historical civil battles, so it had a lot of energy there. Paranormal investigator Tom Cunniff suggested that the residual energy resulting from the volume of violent deaths in the area may have contributed to the haunting. Further adding to the intrigue, a monk from the Cluniac Monastery was hanged in the 15th century for a brutal crime of raping and murdering a young girl in a village, supposedly around the same age as Diane. According to Cunniff, the gallows where this punishment was carried out was in close proximity to the haunted house, actually being just across the street. Although this claim has been disputed, the descriptions of the apparitions witnessed by the Pritchards and their family and friends support Cunniff's argument that the malevolent entity in the house was the spirit of the hanged monk. The witnesses described seeing a dark, hooded figure in the house, adding to the chilling and mysterious atmosphere that surrounded the property. Thus, the legend of the Black Monk of Pontefract came into being. However, this characterization in my opinion, does not align with the commonly accepted definition of a poltergeist. Poltergeist phenomena are notoriously difficult to define and are often surrounded by a sense of mystery and intrigue. They are most commonly described as an unusual form of energy, which is believed to be produced most often by a young person, although there are some theories that suggest that ghosts or demonic possessions may be the root cause. The exact nature of poltergeist activity remains a subject of debate and speculation, with some experts suggesting that it is a form of energy that is released in response to extreme stress and trauma. Poltergeist activity is typically characterized by a range of unusual and seemingly inexplicable occurrences. These may include unexplained knocking or banging sounds, electrical outages or other disturbances to technology, pockets of cold air, and unfamiliar disembodied voices or other types of auditory phenomena. Despite the potentially unsettling or even frightening nature of these occurrences, the perception of the poltergeist is generally not one of malevolent or harmful entities. Instead, the poltergeist is often seen as a playful trickster, an entity or energy that seeks to create loud and attention-grabbing disturbances in almost a childlike fashion. This perception of the poltergeist as a harmless and mischievous entity has been perpetuated in popular culture, where alleged cases of poltergeist activity are often dramatized and sensationalized. The idea that the manifestation of energy is thought to stem from the presence of a distressed youngster has contributed to this perception, as it suggests that the poltergeist is not a true malevolent force, but rather a misunderstood and potentially troubled entity. Despite the popular belief that poltergeist activity is short-lived, with documented cases lasting approximately 1 week to 3 months, the true nature and duration of poltergeist phenomena still remains a mystery. Further research is needed to fully understand the causes and characteristics of this enigmatic and intriguing occurrences. I don't see how this particular poltergeist is tied to one person or the Pritchard family at all. I see this more as a malevolent entity, as it was supposedly there before the Pritchards and is said to still be there. You can find out for yourself, since it's like a paranormal bed and breakfast now. I don't know. What do you think about this, Deb?
I don't know. It just doesn't all jive for me. Is it possible it could just be a ghost rather than a poltergeist?
Well, yeah, it is. And it could be both, you know, because it could be that the reason it really ramped up for those couple of years was when Diane was an adolescent, about 14, coming into her own and really ramped up the entity who had supposedly murdered and raped a young girl of that age, you know, and then it went back to a normal haunting type of deal after she was gone. I'm not completely sure.
Well, what about the Farrar family? What happened to them?
They moved, and all the activity that they had completely stopped. There was no more. You know, even when they were in that house, their daughter was getting scratched in the face and everything else. And they even put mittens and stuff on her hands when they put her to bed. And she would wake up in the morning with scratches all over her face again and the mittens still in place. So there was definitely no explanation for that. And that's what freaked them out. And they were like, nope, we're out of here. Hey, Pritchards, would you like this house? And that's how the whole deal went about. But I don't know. What about you, folks? Let us know your thoughts. And until next time, when we discuss another tale yet to be told. Thank you for listening. And remember to like and share the show. We would also appreciate a 5-star rating wherever possible to help new listeners find the show. We welcome all questions or comments you may have about this or any other episode. And our contact information can be found in the show notes of this episode. You can also follow us at foreverparanormal.com. And if you'd like to support us, you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com /foreverparanormal. The links to these are also in the show notes of this episode.